to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence. I'm Greg Williams. I'm looking out over our beautiful Texas Medical Center here live. We are live just a few days before Christmas. Can you believe it already? Looking out over Houston, Texas, one of the most beautiful cities in the world. I just love this place. We want to just welcome you here this evening, and we're going to have an awesome hour this evening. And I just ask that you just sit back, and you may want to grab a pencil, a piece of paper, or an ink pen, or something to jot down, because I think we're going to get some great information to share with you this evening, and it's going to be really good. Next week, we're going to have the same guest tonight as next week. We're going to do a two-parter because I just think that Sue Fort White is just going to be an awesome guest. There's just so much. I don't want to rush through her brain tonight. So I asked her the other day, can you do a two-parter? And I have never done a two-parter before. So we're just going to kind of go in cruise mode and just slowly, just casually talk about some wonderful things that she has going and kind of get inside of her head a little bit about the things that she is doing and being a champion for. The first program in 2020, I can't even believe we're in a different decade in a few weeks, will be Julie Kaplow, and she is an unbelievable advocate at the Texas Children's Hospital here. Her office is just across the bridge from mine, and she was just recently on a CBS Sunday Morning Show, I believe, with Jane Pauley, and it's just going to be a great show. That'll be the first Sunday evening in 2020. So we welcome you to that. If you would like to still get, because I promise I will do this, if you would like to still get the free ebook that we mailed out, I mailed out, I don't know how many, or emailed out hundreds of these since our Hope for the Holidays video show that we had a few weeks ago. If you want to get that, just please email me. Get on the shatteredbythedarkness.com, and before the sun rises in the morning, I promise it will be in your inbox. I get to work around 3 o'clock in the morning, so it will be there, and you may want to have that information to be able to help somebody or to help yourself during these holiday times. You know, we talked about it a couple weeks ago that holidays are tough. Really tough. And I just want to be honest with you. There's some triggers that I want to discuss. And Sue Fort White is with us tonight, and she's already here. I've already asked her to be patched in. Sue, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Okay, good evening.
Fantastic. Good evening, Sue, and just welcome. I'll officially introduce you here in a minute, but I kind of just want to do this as an intro, and then we'll jump into you. But I want to get your input and your insight after I share this and see what you think for you. But first of all, holiday depression is absolutely real. It is a time of high anxiety, lots of stress, and it's brought on about so many different things that can contribute to it. And there's triggers, that things that can trigger holiday depression. And what is normally a happy time for so many people can be a sad time and a despair time for a lot of people. And the first trigger that I just wanted to throw out there is seasonal affective disorder. And it's called SAD. It's abbreviated SAD. It is a form of depression that can raise its nasty head during the change of seasons, particularly from summer to winter, from light to dark. And it can happen during the holiday seasons. And it's more than just the blues, but it is absolutely a real disorder. And there's a couple self-care tips that you can really take care of this to try to help you through that. If, as you go into these holidays, you're already triggered up that you know it's going to be a terrible time, there's two or three that I want you to jot down or mention to somebody, possibly if you know that they deal with this. Get out in the sunlight as much as you can. Go for a walk out in the sun, especially if it's nice out or even if it's chilly out. Go out and walk around, get in the light. If you stay in the darkness, it's going to affect you even more. So self-care is allow the sunlight to hit your face, to be in your house. Let the light in. Open all the curtains. Let the light in. Don't worry if it's cold. The cold can leave you even feel you make you feel invigorated. You may want to light a candle or some essence oils or something like that to be able to help that anxiety and the stress too. So that seasonal anxiety is real, and it is a form of real depression and a syndrome. The second trigger that I want to talk about is what this season does to so many people already with money, with family, with all the activities. Without the doubt, just the normal stresses of a holiday can trigger depression. And I'm not talking about just down days. I'm not talking about, oh no, this is going to be a lower day than normal. I'm talking about depression. So while for most folks it's a time of fun and parties and gatherings and get-togethers, it is a time for stress and anxiety. And there's a few things that you can do. First of all, you need to take time out for yourself. Before you can begin to even think of other people, you have to make sure you're in condition to deal with them. Take time to look after you. So many people look and try to take care of everybody else's world, and then they leave their world to crumble around them. And you don't want to do that. Before you can let the chaos into your out of your world, you have to be able to look into you and try to allow you some time. Set some realistic goals, fun goals for the holidays. Don't offer Christmas at your place if you know you're not going to enjoy it. Don't get overwhelmed with things, and keep a tab on the spending. It may be all way too late for that by now. We're only a few days since Super Saturday was yesterday. But keep a tab on that, because financial stress is a big contributor to the overall holiday stress. And then I think probably the biggest one, and then I'm going to let Sue jump in and give me her thoughts, but the biggest one, the trigger at least for me, is past events. When big life-changing events take place, a loss of a loved one, a family separation, a divorce, past abuses that can be kind of dog-eared toward this holiday or toward this time of the year, those can become very difficult things to deal with, especially if there's going to be an empty chair at your dinner table this year, that this is the first year that you're going to go through the holidays with the loss of that loved one. It can be a little tougher. Some little things, and you want to keep an eye on this: the smell of a cologne or perfume, the sound of a song playing, the sound of somebody's laughter can actually trigger those memories of the painful experience that you're going through. I know there are some in my life that immediately when I hear, smell, see, or experience, it automatically kicks me into a panic mode, and I have to work through that. I have to get grounded pretty quick. Apart from turning into a hermit, there's a few things that you can do to help keep those memories from popping up. Be ready, because there's going to be people that come up and ask you, hey, how you holding up? How you doing? So you need to keep in mind that they don't mean to offend you most of the time. They're trying to help you through it. The tough time, especially if this is the first year or two of your loss or your experience, and that you may be remembering during this time of the year. So you may want to practice how you're going to respond to that. So if somebody comes up and say, hey, how you doing? Make sure you're prepared to answer that question in your mind before it kind of blindsides you. One that I always recommend is talk it out. Find somebody that you can talk to, chat with, email with, whatever, but share those feelings of what's going on. I can't tell you how many emails and conversations I've had with people over online since that Hope for the Holidays show. It's just been so many people that have just reached out and shared with me, and I converse back and forth. I don't know them, but I want to be that person, that sounding board, if you have nobody else to go to or just want to use somebody that doesn't know you or anything about you. Allow yourself the process of finding someone to talk it out with. And one thing I found out this week that really was a joy for Christmas for me was spend time with some kids. I went and saw our school Christmas program, the little 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds. And, you know, just sitting back and just watching those little children smile and giggle and laugh and sing the songs to the top of their lungs, it brought joy into me, even though it's not a joyful time for me. And I think that's just an awesome tip there. Just spend time with kids. Christmas time becomes even more magical when you allow children to get involved. And that's just some three triggers I kind of wanted you to be aware of. But Sue, what do you think? Do you have any wisdom when it comes down to this next couple days and how to make it through it?
Well, Greg, I would just say that you're the one with the wisdom, and I think that you've articulated so many important yet frequently unvisited concepts during the season. And I think that people just, when you don't feel joyful and when you're struggling with a lot of pain or just some complexity in relationships or loss or whatever, you know, this season can feel oppressive. You know, because there's all these expectations of happiness and joy. What you said was incredible. The other thing is, you know, healing is a process, and sometimes it feels like 3 steps forward, 1 step back. I think that, you know, I think I would like to make a bumper sticker that says, it's okay to need help and it's okay to get help. Sometimes we are in a place, we're in a good place, and we can be the voice of encouragement. And as J.J. Warren says, we can be companions of compassion. We can bring joy in unexpected places. Sometimes we are the bearers, we're the bringers of hope and joy, but sometimes we need that voice of encouragement. So I think that your advice about finding not just solar light, but finding even one person in your life that is just seems to be sort of that safe person that will listen deeply, because that's where healing begins. And we, you know, for me, I just need one other person on the earth to understand what I'm feeling. And once I feel like, wow, you just listened to me, I do feel a weight lifted. I feel I feel a loosening of the soil, and then I can begin to replace the negative feelings and emotions with something a little bit, sort of pull the thorn from my side, if you will, and replace it with another thought.
Yeah.
So there's a reciprocity to being human. Sometimes we're in a good, strong place, and sometimes we're just not, and it's okay to seek help.
That's awesome. And I want to officially now introduce you. Thank you for those comments. Sue Fort White is the executive director of Our Kids, and she's done that for over 14 years. And she has literally devoted her career to creating access to information, resources, and services to the underdeserved population, such as teens and families that are in crisis, victims of children, of sexual child abuse, domestic violence, women in prison, refugee and immigrant women, children in foster care. And she has just an awesome organization, Our Kids. And she started this campaign, What If I Told You? And I want everybody to write this email down, or this website down, whatifitoldyou.com, and promise me that even during the commercial break, but some of the longer versions, about 10 minutes, after this program's over tonight, pop that video on and watch it, and then tag it and share it with everybody that you know on your social media. Put it on every one of your Facebooks. Believe it or not, Sue, I'm sitting here right now. I just got an email from a lady in Algeria. Where in the world is Algeria? But she just got she's from the Algeria University of Batna, and she wants a few of my books. And she's hearing the program, and she wants to be able to get some help for some of the people that she's teaching in school. And it's amazing. And if we just all group together, and that's what I love about what you're doing, Sue. We have never met, but we're just kind of joining together with so many people trying to get the word out about what's happening in all these people's lives that sometimes we just pass by on the street.
Yes. Well, you know, Our Kids is just the best work I've ever known in my whole life. We provide medical evaluations and crisis counseling in response to child sexual abuse. We are entering our 33rd year, and our model, we've always been trauma-informed, and we have always integrated both medical services and crisis counseling, mental health services. And so what I have learned from the staff at Our Kids, and the other thing is you rarely see the experts sharing call 24/7, but we do that because it's the most compassionate thing to do. If a child's assaulted in the middle of the night or on the weekend, that child and family deserves and needs the very best expert care possible. So entering our 33rd year, we've evaluated probably over 28,000 children. We serve 47 counties in Middle Tennessee. And what the clinical team members have taught me is that child sexual abuse happens in every community, every race, every socioeconomic level, every religion, urban, rural, it does. And it's I think that one of the things that's the most heartbreaking for me is that there are millions and millions of adult survivors in this country. And because of the stigma, because of the silence and secrecy and stigma, there is so much suffering. And I think that every single week, Greg, every single week, and almost it feels like sometimes nearly every day, you know, a caregiver, a parent, a grandparent, an aunt will during their appointment at Our Kids that lasts between an hour and a half and 4 hours, because almost all the time the perpetrator is someone that's known and trusted by the family.
Yeah.
Almost every day a caregiver will say, you know, it takes a while to de-escalate because people are so distressed. They either feel shame and guilty that they didn't see it coming, they didn't protect the child, or they don't believe the child. because believing the child would mean that everything is turned way upside down for them and for the family and everything. So many, many, many times, hundreds, thousands of times, we have heard, you know, a person say, I can't believe I finally feel safe enough to say this. I can't carry this burden by myself anymore. It happened to me, and it was my grandfather, and I was 7. It was my older cousin, and I was 11. You know, it was the neighbor's father, you know, and I was 13. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And so, you know, we just really have all, it's been on our hearts to give the country something to break through the silence and the stigma and the suffering, and to inform the country that one in four, and you and I have talked about this. This is not even accurate, but we just had to land someplace with numbers. 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 7 boys will mm-hmm. experience some form of child sexual abuse before age 18. And we felt like, you know, people in this country, if you don't know that it's epidemic prevalence, then you don't know what to look out for. You don't know what to ask about when your child goes to a slumber party or the soccer league or the, you know, or whatever. But the other, you know, the other thing is millions of adult survivors, you know, are carrying, you know, the stigma and the pain, the guilt that shouldn't even be theirs. And so we really wanted to bring information, but also resources. Resources are medicine.
Yes.
And we wanted to bring this to the country to say to every adult survivor, you know, you are brave. You are courageous. We embrace you. You know, to every child, this is not your fault. You've done nothing wrong. And we have heard from people all across this country. So when you hear a call and you're faithful to it and you respond with something really meaningful with no strings attached, our mm-hmm. only goal is to reach as many people as possible with information and resources about child sexual abuse. So
wow.
we branded it. We didn't know. I was calling it the Anthem video, and we worked with Mac Kirkland, Creative Communications, my dear friend. He worked with us for a whole year. He just couldn't wrap his head around 1 in 4, 1 in 7. And I finally said, where is my Anthem video that we want to push out? And he goes, I can't deal with, you know, I can't wrap my head around this. I said, then make that the focus. So
yeah.
The 2-minute video, he did such a gorgeous job.
Yeah,
the 2-minute video is beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, I tell you what, we're going to take our first break, and I want to get some people involved if they want to call in tonight at 888-627-6008. And Sue, we're going to go into the 4 truths that you usually share about the children about not disclosing the sexual abuse immediately, and we want to talk about those and dig a little deeper into this. You're listening to Break the Silence, and we'll be back in about a minute and 12 and a half seconds.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Thank you, Douglas. A fine job as always. And you can get Shattered by the Darkness on Amazon. As a matter of fact, it's on Amazon cheaper than what I can buy it from directly from my publisher. So I don't understand how they do that, Sue, but they do it. Amazon can sell things cheaper for what you think cost. But anyway, you get it for like $5 and pennies. And get on there and get that. And get on shatteredbythedarkness.com. And if you would, share, like, comment on there, and then Instagram, and do that also. And we're going to be giving away some more of the new book that's going to be coming out, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. And we're going to kind of take you through an evacuation of an emotional hurricane in that book. And we're going to be giving away some books. So if you want in that contest, feel free to get in there and do those things on Instagram and the webpage. But also this whatifitoldyou.com. Sue Ford White from Nashville. Of course, you're up there with my grandchildren. I hope is it snowing in Nashville right now?
No, it's a wintry, wet evening. It's about 50 degrees.
Yeah, it's kind of cool here, but it's no snow. We don't get snow in Houston, not very often. If we get a little bit, it shuts the city down. Anyway, I want you to share these four truths that you normally share about. We're talking just about child sexual abuse, and what's the four truths that you share with people when you're out talk or with the people around the office and people that come in that may interest us tonight as we're listening.
So the four things that we normally anchor with are, first of all, you know, people always think that there's going to be bodily injury, you know, genital injury or whatever. And, you know, we've done amazing research that we've published, injury prevalence study in 2016. It was really a landmark thing. And only 7% of the time is there any evidence, physical evidence, that anything has happened to the child. You know, because the perpetrator, it's completely different from adult sexual assault. The perpetrator doesn't want to hurt the child because they don't want to lose access. I mean, they don't want to hurt the child at all. So that's one thing. Because a lot of times that's what families sort of want to know. Oh, if there are no marks, then that means nothing happened. No, that's not what that means at all. So, and then second, people think that children will tell immediately, if something happens, if someone does them to their body. And, you know, the child, is confused, oftentimes scared. And if they've been told, don't let anyone touch your private parts, and then something happens, they get really afraid that they're going to be in trouble.
Right.
And it's also a lot of other confusing feelings. It's very confusing, and then it's scary. And then sometimes the perpetrator threatens them. And so a lot of times children won't tell for days, weeks, months, years. Sometimes they never tell until they're an adult. And that really is important to remember. The third thing is, I've always told clinical team members, if the perpetrator is the minister, the coach, or the teacher, when the family leaves the building, I want you to come into my office and tell me. Because all the high-profile cases in our country's media, a lot of times that's who it is. It's rarely ever the coach, you know, the teacher, or the minister. It's more like the older cousin, the woman, you know, the mom's boyfriend, you know, the stepfather, the grandfather, the uncle. It's like that, which is really disturbing, you know, to the non-offending caregiver, because they're like, what, you know, it's just so, it creates so much distress and shame for them and guilt, and it's just really hard. And so a lot of times the appointment at our kids is so lengthy because we have to give people time and space to calm down and just come to ground with what's going on And then we want to listen to their story. We want to listen to what else is going on in the home, Mom. What else is going on? What's going on with you? What's your story? And just listen really deeply. And because we believe that children are resilient and so are families. It's especially true if the caregiver can be emotionally available and not see the child as tarnished and broken forever. See them as resilient, because child sexual abuse does not define. Yes, it is a really difficult thing to go through, and every situation's different. The intensity, the longevity of the abuse, all of that, the type of sexual contact. But we do hold that truth close to our heart. We do see the child as resilient. We see the family as resilient. And we're very, a lot of times we'll spend time, we'll go, Mom, you're doing so many things right. You know, you're going to get through this. And, you know, the voice of encouragement, Greg, is so important. Because when your world is falling apart, if somebody can tell the truth about something real that they observe in you, you have great empathy. You know, you love your child. You're resourceful. You know, you've got a great sense of humor. You know, your child is smart and observant. I mean, if you observe the family, be with that caregiver, and then, you know, to really say, you can get through this, you know, and we're going to help you, and we're going to refer you, and this is what we think would help you. So the last one, I know I got really deep into that, but anyway, the last one is we used to say it's the stranger danger is not a thing. You know, it's not the weird guy with the raincoat on the playground that I was taught to stay away from.
Right.
First of all, there's no profile of the perpetrator. But with all of this online horrible stuff going on right now, and we've been sounding the alarm for about 5 or 6 years, but all of these adults posing as preteen boys or 14-year-old boys and really manipulating and tricking really tweens, you know, preteens. And, you know, the child thinks that they know the person they're communicating with, because they've been communicating with, or, you know, sharing stuff or whatever. But it's not real. And the person on the other end is not a tween or a preteen or a teenager. They're a 37-year-old man, you know, who is going to sexually assault you. And it's horrifying. So now we're going to have to completely redo all of our collateral material, because the child doesn't think it's a stranger, but it is a stranger.
Yeah. You know, all four of these things that you just shared, I have 20 questions on each of those. It's just amazing, just this last one you mentioned, that a parent in this country, if they go and look at their child's cell phone or computer and the child pulls away and say no, you take the computer and the cell phone away and never give it back to them. We have to be parents in this world to where if you have a privilege of having either one of those in this house, you will always have, I will always have access to what you're doing on it and who you're talking on it. Kids don't run the world and their cell phones and their Facebooks and all that. We have to, as parents, realize that there's stuff that's going on out there that is literally, they're being allowing these perpetrators into their homes and into their children's lives all the time. They're out there looking for them and an opportunity. Like you said, I think if we even knew the number, Sue, of people that contacted our kids or grandkids online acting or posing in a chat room as another teenager, would scare us today.
Oh, and also in the multiplayer game situations, I'm telling you, Greg, you just said this. You just said the best wisdom of the whole hour so far. You know, first of all, the 9-year-old or 11-year-old with a phone, it's not their phone. It's their parents' phone that they are allowed to use. You're exactly right. This whole situation, parents have got to be parents and not yes. pushovers. And I don't know if you've noticed or not, but just in the last 10 days, I have seen articles in Sunday New York Times and all these other places. People are freaking out and about this whole thing about all of this horrible pornography and how easy it is for children to see it, to have access to it. And then their brains, it's first of all, it's addictive and it's horrible. And some of it depicts, I mean, horrible things happening. But the other thing is, it's so insidious because it's just out there. It's not, I mean, it's these people, there are a couple of organizations. One is thorn.org. There are wonderful people who have created technology to help the good guys find the bad guys and seek out these people who are abusing and exploiting children online. And the second group is called BARK, B-A-R-K, and they do their own surveillance. So they will, you know, the article that I'm thinking about, this woman who's a mother and all this stuff, she's 37 years old. They made her up to be an 11-year-old girl named Bailey and put her sort of her profile out there. Within such a short amount of time, 52 men asked her for pictures, wanted to send her their, I mean, it was, you know, all this really horrible, vile stuff they were saying to this, who they thought was an 11-year-old. And the other problem is this, I've forgotten what the word is, it's like sextortion. Mm-hmm. You know, so if they get one picture that's sort of inappropriate, they will keep pushing for more. And if the child doesn't want to give it to them, they say, we'll show it to your whole school.
Yeah.
If you don't do what we want you to do. And the other thing is parents, like, you know, they're, you know, all of their settings seem to be private because people are so, if they get a picture, the GPS is in that. They can find that child. If any identifying, like, you know, the school t-shirt or sweatshirt, anything that shows what school they go to, these people are diabolical. It's really awful.
And, you know, there's people probably listening saying, oh, my lands, so you guys are really going over the edge of being paranoid people. No, this is fact. And I don't even think we know the vast amount of the heinous crimes that are being done every day. And, you know, you mentioned something, and I wanted to tap into that to see if you have wisdom on this. You said these game sites where the kids get on and join groups and play games. So you're saying the perpetrators get on there too and play these games with teenagers and kids and then start chatting
And they'll buddy up and start sharing information, and they're looking for, the girl that wants attention, that needs attention. Every girl needs attention. You know, but they just want to be somebody say, oh, you're pretty. Send me a picture. Oh, you're so pretty. You should be a model. I mean, but you know, also the boys, I mean, there are a lot, you know, they're looking for boys that are unhappy, mad at their parents, you know, don't feel like they have any friends. That's the other thing that's mingled and mixed into all this is, I went to, I probably shouldn't go down that rabbit hole. I'm just going to say that, you know, the dawn of, you know, people having that the tipping point where all these people have smartphones and even children have smartphones, that smartphones have diminished people's ability and desire to have real human contact. And then there's the cyberbullying, and then there's the fear of missing out, you know, FMO, and people feeling like they can't live up to what other people are doing. They're not popular enough. They're not pretty enough. You know, and, you know, we just have a terrible situation of, you know, children and teenagers feeling alienated and really unloved and misunderstood. It's really quite jarring. You know, it really is.
You know, I have said for years, and some people think I'm radical. I just think that I have my eyes really opened up to what I've went through, and I can literally see it, I think, with other people. Or I think the opportunities, it's like, oh, my lands. That parent doesn't know what they're allowing their children to possibly get involved with. But I have said for years, I personally think the school buildings ought to be used all day for the kids and all night for the parents. I think we need to start coming up with some kind of educational programs that the parents can come to enlighten them on how to be a parent and not their friend. It's not a parent's job to be your child's best friend. That's what gets you in trouble. You're to be the parent.
Yeah.
And there's guidelines on that. And our country has really let our folks down by not having those materials readily available and free of cost to where the parents can come in and learn about these things. I'm getting ready to go up, I believe in April. I'm going to spend 2 full days in Chicago and going to train 2 different counties on child abuse and then the resilience to become trauma-informed communities in 2 different counties right outside Chicago. That's what we have to do in every county in the country, and before it's too late, because a parent will be knocking on the door screaming for the information after it happens to one of the people they love. We have to do it before it happens.
So what I would say is Google and Apple just in the last 10 days, they have come out with some new software that controls certain things like texting, phone calls, FaceTime. It doesn't manage getting out the really bad apps. But I guess what I want to say is I feel like I come from the front line because our kids, we are first responders to the trauma of child sexual abuse. That's why 6 years ago we came out with Keeping Kids Safe Online, this brochure that now we're going to have to modify, because we were seeing families coming to us, children coming to us, and the child was lured into horrible situations through an app on their phone. And we were like, what is this? So we called up our friend Rob Kerrigan with the Cyber Crimes Against Children Metro Police Department. He's wonderful. He came and trained the staff. And that's all he does is look for the bad guys online. He is wonderful. And we were like, oh, my gosh, we need to get the board trained and the staff trained. And but it's real. And it's the new horrible. I mean, it really is. It's very, very scary. I completely co-sign on everything that you said, Greg.
I'll tell you, that it's unbelievable. We're going to talk on the other side of this, our last break, and we have to take these breaks because podcast, when it goes out into the podcast world Tuesday, they like it in 20, 25-minute segments. So we're going to take another break, and it'll be about a minute and a half or so. We'll be right back with Sue Ford-White as we finish up the show.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back. We are with Sue Fort White from Nashville. And you would think Nashville would be, you know, you're in the Bible Belt there. And, you know, I was born and raised up in that part of the country in the Midwest. And what you see in every day, Sue, would probably shock us. And imagine what things are happening in other parts of our country. But that's just the normal part of our, you know, our country right there, Nashville, Tennessee, you know, the country music capital of the world. And this stuff is happening every day. It's happening like that all around the world, though. This is such an epidemic. And I don't want to just, you know, hammer it over and over, but it's important. Curtis, my son, takes care of my website and Instagram and all that, because I don't even know how to turn the computer on. You know how that's what I had children for, to mow the lawn and show me how to set the VCR time. But anyway, Curtis, if you could, I want you to go ahead on the website and put that whatifitoldyou.com. I want a link on our website to be able to patch everybody in. So if you're listening, go to mine, and shortly we'll try to have whatifitoldyou.com. Tell me about the you mentioned Thorn .org. Yeah. That intrigues me. That's the one that you mentioned the other day, that Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher came up with?
I think that they're not together anymore, but yes. So Ashton Kutcher is the real champion here, and they are creating technology to look for and find and help law enforcement find the bad guys who are abusing and exploiting children online. So they are, and they're getting companies to sign on. They're getting corporate partners. They're getting all of these, you know, tech creatives to come and help them create the next thing that will try to find the next horrible app. And it gives me great hope. They're incredible. They're really doing great work. Bark is doing great work. But you know, so there are people who are really getting smart about mobilizing resources to protect children. And, yep, you know, Greg, that's what we need. We need really smart people. Cause you know, one of the social workers at our kids, she just looked at me after she saw that Sunday New York Times article on the front page a couple of Sundays ago, and she said, you know, this is the one thing that if this country had the corporate will to do it, they could obliterate all of these bad things. They could create technology to search out bad apps, to protect the children and do all that stuff. And she said, and unfortunately, until kind of really recently, there was no monetary incentive, you see, because I think greed is at the base of, you know, a lot, you know, most of the worst things in our world. And finally, Google and Apple are coming to the table with new technology for parents. But it's not enough. And so that's why we love thorn.org. That's why we love Bark. You know, anybody who is, you know, who is really sounding the alarm. I mean, I know that some people may think I'm crazy, but if you were at our kids and saw what we saw, what we see all the time, and these children, they're lured into terrible situations and they are abused and exploited, and the family is in shambles, and they just think, we don't know how this happened.
Yeah, well, and you know,
there's no such thing as benign neglect anymore, Greg. If you give a smartphone to a child, they can get to anything.
Yeah, yeah, I think the importance. Yeah, absolutely. I think the thing that kind of concerns me of the impact that this can make, because most people will know, and the research is out there on the internet, that 90 to 95% of all the people that are the perpetrators right now are normally people that the child knows. And so it's people that's cousin, uncle, somebody the family welcomes in, or like in my case, a father and his friends or things of that order. If we allow the entire world to come into our child's bedroom at 2 o'clock in the morning while they're under the covers, you know, FaceTiming or Facebooking or playing games, and the parents aren't aware of it, these numbers may change, and it's going to change to the amount of that could be an absolute horrific number, because it's going to become, you know, I just had somebody on a couple of weeks ago that was in sex trafficking, got caught up in that. Now you can say what you want about our president, good, bad, or indifferent. But one thing that I know that during his presidency I'm proud of is he got rid of that back page and all those things, right, those ads on Craigslist that people would go in and hit for a massage, and all of a sudden it was a whole different thing. They made that illegal where you can't even get back page anymore on most newspapers and things of that order. And so there's legislation that needs to be brought in too, on top of the Apple and the Google and all of this stuff, of saying, hey, we're not trying to curtail information getting out and people's freedom of the press. But when that freedom is coming into our own home and potentially harming our children, that's a different ballgame. That should be completely blocked. And I'm overwhelmed with what's happening.
I know, so am I. But before we end the show, I did want to say one thing. Thank you.
Please.
First of all, thank you so much for this opportunity, and thank you for plugging whatifitoldyou.com. It's a treasure trove of information and resources for adult survivors to get mental health support, to find a child advocacy center anywhere in the country. There are about 881 of them. I mean, there are national links throughout this entire website. But the other thing, Greg, that's so important, you know, we always say safe adults don't ask a child to keep secrets, okay? We got to teach our children that. We've got to teach our children that adults are not always right. And if an adult makes our child or our grandchild feel funny or confused or icky, then come and tell your safe adult, or hopefully one of the safe adults in your life. And then if something happens, you can tell granddaddy, you can tell mom, you can tell whoever. It's like if anybody makes you feel scared, confused, or icky, and I say icky because it just sort of covers a lot of different things, tell somebody. It's okay. Tell somebody. And that's creating that openness and that warmth and that loving openness in a family is so important. It's so important.
I would have loved the opportunity. I don't know what I would have done, but I would have loved the opportunity to have somebody say, hey, what's going on? Is something wrong? Mm-hmm. Did something happen to you? And I never had that. And I don't know what my response would have been, but I would have welcomed that. I was craving that. I was literally screaming, I need help. And nobody would listen. And there's children that we walk by every day that need help. And
well, I will tell you that I have read your book, and it's an unbelievable account. There are parts of it that are so difficult, but I have to tell you that you are courageous and you are a beacon of light and hope, because look how resilient you are. You are the bearer of encouragement and hope and kindness to the world, Greg. I mean, you know, you really are proof positive that, you know, that resilience, you know, can resilience can overcome, and you can flourish, you know, in the midst of unbelievable adversity. I mean, look at you. I'm in awe of you.
Well, I tell you, I appreciate that. And I think if we can just reach out and Sue, get the word out like you're doing in such a wonderful way with this What If I Told You, this can change lives, millions of lives, because it's something you can share and it would open up a conversation. It could start a good discussion. And so I encourage
people are not alone. They're not alone.
No,
they're not alone. And it's, you know, we always tell the child, this is not your fault. You've done nothing wrong. We believe you.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, it's been a joy being with you tonight. I knew it would go fast. And we're going to end with this on this side of it. But when we pick back up next Sunday night, I want to talk about the resiliency. I want to talk about the hope. I want to talk about things, how to get over some things and build it. And then I want to know your thoughts about trauma-informed schools, businesses, hospitals, communities, and I want to get your take on that too, and talk about the other side, because we kind of talked some dark things tonight, but on next week's show, we're going to really dig in so we can put these two shows together and be really get the full gamut of everything. And Sue, I appreciate, I wear the What If I Told You .com shirt that you sent me, and I appreciate that. And I really just I appreciate, and when everybody I was talking to, I saw a church, Gene and Doug and April and Brett, and I told them that you were going to be on the program tonight, and they remembered you from the holiday show, and they said, oh, it's going to be a good one. And they're all listening tonight, so people are following you and love what you have to say. And thanks for spending an hour with us a couple days before Christmas. And I want to say Merry Christmas to you.
It's been a blessing. Merry Christmas. It's been a blessing for me to be on the show with you tonight, Greg. Thank you.
You're most welcome, and we will talk to you and we'll pick back up next week with the rest of this part two with Sue Fort White. Make sure everybody gets on whatifitoldyou.com right now when we log off, and watch that, because it will change your life just seeing those eyes, those faces, those lives that are sharing their story. And it's unbelievable. Thanks, Sue. Appreciate you. No matter what you're going through tonight, we always close the program with this. No matter what you've been through, no matter how you're going to deal with the next couple of days going into Christmas, I want you to know, and I promise you, as long as you have breath, there is always hope. Never, ever, ever stop believing in hope. And thank you for joining us tonight for Breaking the Silence. We ask that you join us next week, each Sunday night, 8 o'clock Central, right here on Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Have a Merry Christmas, everyone. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.